Om du gillar Hemma hos Strage så kan du stötta podden via Patreon. Om du gör det får du nya avsnitt 2 dagar före alla andra. Du får också den officiella Hemma hos Strage-kaffemuggen. Och du är med i utlottningen av kaffemuggar som handmålats av de medverkande artisterna. Det blir även en del andra roliga erbjudanden. Och du hamnar som kulturmecenat på min personliga lista över världens snällaste personer. Tack för att du lyssnar.
Hey everybody, and hey Frederick, I'm very happy to be here. My name is Sam Herring. I am the singer for Future Islands, as well as an artist under the name Hemlock Ernst, and I do all kinds of stuff. Samuel T. Herring.
What does the T stand for?
Thompson. That was my Farmore's maiden name, her first name, before she was married.
I'm so happy to have you here. We haven't had any international guests for a pretty long time.
Yeah, I'm happy that I could be here. It's kind of interesting. Like I was, I had gone back to Baltimore in March to finish mixing the next record that we're releasing is Future Islands, As Long As You Are in October. And I got stuck here. My partner is Swedish. We were in London together when I went back to the States. It was like March the 10th. And by March the 12th and 13th, borders just started being shut. So we were actually separated for 5 months. And I've just been able to get back to Sweden and be back together with her. And that's been a blessing. And I feel very fortunate. But it's cool that we can do these kinds of things even when I'm far away, you know.
So how did you meet your Swedish girlfriend?
Well, we just met through we became friends online, and then we finally met after about 8 months of talking. We finally met in Copenhagen at a show. She's originally from Malmo, that was easy. And then we pretty much just kind of fell in love as soon as we met, and have been together ever since. It's been 3.5 years.
And what was the thing that kind of made you interested in each other?
Well, she was familiar with our music, and I, of course, was completely just thought she was beautiful, and then didn't really think anything past that until we began talking. I didn't really think I had a chance to hang out with this beautiful girl. It was just like a friendship, and we just became really. I didn't have many female friends. I really valued that friendship, and. And it was just one of those things that happened as soon as we met, you know. It was just, it was cute, you know. We're just like, have been talking, FaceTiming for 7.5 months. And then we're holding hands, walking through the Glyptotek in Copenhagen and just enjoying each other's company. And I think it's really easy in the modern era to kind of ruin relationships before they even start because of a closeness and a speed to relationships and social media, how they can complicate things. But in a way, I think the distance that we had between us allowed us to become really good friends before we were actually face to face, if that makes any sense. And like kind of like she knew the worst things about me because I just saw her as a friend instead of you know, I think we also have ways of covering up our truth for people that we're trying to convince to hang out with us. We're just like, I'm not going to be really honest because I don't want you to run away straight off. But I think because of the honesty that was laid bare, because it was like, well, this isn't like a relationship. This is just a friendship that I think that kind of honesty and that came out in the relationship before we met really made us good friends, and I think that's why it felt so natural afterwards.
I read somewhere that, you know, there's some kind of difference between men and women when it comes to relationships, that most women say, you know, if someone asks them, what do you value most in a relationship, women will say honesty. Mm-hmm. And if you ask men what they value the most, a lot of them will say, well, the most important thing is that she does not know what I think.
Oh, for real? That's terrible.
She must never know exactly what I think about things, because then she will leave me.
Oh my goodness. Well, I mean,
so women demand honesty and men fear honesty.
Well,
I'm not sure if that's 100% true, but
yeah, I think especially in this day and age, we can't say anything about how exactly women are or men are because everything is much more fluid, and that's true. And I also believe that men shouldn't be Well, women shouldn't be held to stereotypes. Men shouldn't. But there is, I do think in the macho man world of the world, there is probably a lot of truth in that. But that's scary because I don't think a lot of people are honest about who they are. And that causes a lot of issues. You know, your lack of trust in someone else to believe who you are, just that keeps rolling where there's no trust and there's no compassion and then there's no empathy and then your president is a flaming pile of dog shit, as in my country.
Have you had any kind of culture shock since you came to Sweden?
I guess as a traveler, you know, I've been traveling around the world playing music since the beginning of 2009 was my first European tour. So I've always, I think there was a level of comfort in that already coming in, but there's still things I'm learning. I just had sore strumming for the first time a few weeks ago. That was a little shocking. but I think overall, you know, my partner's parents are extremely sweet people and have welcomed me into their home. And you know, her brother and sister-in-law, like everybody has made me feel at home. So nothing is, I feel safe and around her friends, like everybody just makes me feel comfortable. And for me, I've always been kind of a person who, likes to have a quiet place. It's kind of funny because I'm trying to learn Svenska and at the same time, I'm worried about it because the great thing about going to a coffee shop to write is that if you're in a different country, nobody bothers you. You don't get stuck in anyone else's conversation because you don't know what anybody's saying. So you're just like, you know, it's like bird sounds. Like writing in Spain is a beautiful or France or Italy because I can just kind of be alone while surrounded by people. And I think I deal with that a lot in my writing. So it kind of works, but one day I will know what everyone's saying and I won't be able to concentrate again.
The first track on the new Future Islands album, As Long As You Are, is called Glada, mm-hmm. which means happy in Swedish, but it might also refer to a bird, right?
Yeah, it's a double meaning, but it's supposed to refer to the bird, which is known as the red kite.
The red kite,
English. Milvus, the scientific name. I think it's Milvus.
And you sing about flying, and there are even some bird sounds on the track, right?
Yeah, but the bird sounds, I believe, are geese from North Carolina, which is the state where Future Islands was raised out of. That's where me and William and Garrett grew up and where we started the band. But yeah, Glada is, the birds are known to inhabit the southern region, the Skåne region of Sweden, and are beautiful birds. I love them, and being spending a lot of time in the countryside, you see them, you know, circling the fields, and I don't know, I love the shape of them. They have this great V, this large V-shaped tail, but when they make a big sweeping turn, you see like the flash of red color on their backs. It's just beautiful. And I think I was feeling that sense of freedom in coming to Sweden for the first time, spending my first summer there in 2017 and then the spring of 2018. Feeling this sense of home far away from home and feeling this sense of a new love forming that at a time when, you know, at the time I was 32 and 33 years old, kind of, I'll probably never find that kind of giddy young love again. I found this great mature love at a mature age, an actual healthy relationship. I was like, well, I've never been in one of these before. And I'm feeling all these feelings in this time where the spring is popping in Skåne. And I was like, how did I get this? Like, how am I so lucky to get this in my life at this point in my life after? And I say that in the song, like, why do I deserve the sea again? The sea being everything, the greatness of life. Why do I deserve this after all I've done and finding love in the end, you know? And yeah, that song was written in those fields in a little town called Ekestad. Yeah.
So how long have you been a couple for?
Three and a half years.
Three and a half years.
Yeah.
And what does she do, your girlfriend?
She's an actor.
Oh.
Yeah.
Has she been in anything that I've seen?
Yeah. Fart Blinda, Springfloden.
What's her name?
Julia Ragnarsson.
Oh.
Yeah.
I know who that is.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations. That's lovely.
She's amazing. She's really given me so much and given me life again. So yeah, this song is "M" by The Cure. The Cure are a band that have meant a lot to me for a very long time. They're also a band. There's, you know, me and my bandmates all come from very varied musical backgrounds, but The Cure have always been a band that we all love. And 17 Seconds for me, it's really hard to pick my favorite Cure album, but 17 Seconds is the one for me. And "M" is just, it just starts with that line. Hello Image, tell me a line from your favorite song, and to me that's just like it just gives me so much feeling and thought of this person, of writing this song, of almost like Robert Smith being like, tell me what to say. Image, is he looking at himself? Is he looking at something, trying to pull feeling? But it feels like to me as a songwriter, it like just mixes up my feelings, and I love that feeling.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So you're from Moorhead City, coastal town in North Carolina, with about 9,000 inhabitants.
Yeah.
What's it like to grow up there?
It's simple. Simple, quiet. I mean, you know,
is it like a fishing town?
Yeah. So Moorhead City is the state port of North Carolina, which also has a huge fishing industry. It's very much Moorhead City and the neighboring town of Newport, which is where I went to school, were a fishing community, pretty working class, although there's a huge tourism industry with the beaches there. So you have kind of an interesting mix of people with a lot of money and people with no money, and everything in between. Lots of huge farming community in Newport, which is where I grew up. So I grew up in kind of a split dual brain. You know, my father was an attorney. He was a lawyer and
a divorce attorney.
My father was a divorce attorney, and
did that give you any special insight into like the relationship issues that you might sing about?
No, I really do think so. You know, I grew up. I probably spent the first, 12 or 13 years of my life sitting in the back of that office, you know, seeing men and women walk in and out of his office, either laughing or crying, you know, seeing the children of these parents, you know, playing with the old toys in the front office, sometimes playing, but usually just, you know, feeling, as a child, kind of crazy emotions and empathy for these people that I don't really know what's happening. Like I hear the like talking through the walls, but I don't really know their stories and the things my parents brought home, that they would talk over dinner while we were too young to understand. But at the same time, we probably did understand some of these things. Also the fact, you know, my parents have been together for 40 plus years now. So they're, you know, they work together. My mom runs my father's office, and then, you know, it's mainly doing divorce and custody, which is really intense human emotional work. You know, sometimes being like a therapist and things like this, but they were always strong together. It made me value that relationship that could work, but also understand that things happen in life. And yeah, once again, like trying to see having kind of a dual brain, even at a young age, like looking at these things happen around me.
I know that you got into hip hop quite early.
Yeah, I fell in love with rap music when I was about 13 or 14 years old, 13 years old. And my brother brought home a CD by this group, Gravediggers, that's called 6 Feet Deep. It was they only did two or three albums, they did two albums as the full group, and then I think they did a third and a fourth with just two of the members.
But it's like a side project for RZA from the Wu-Tang Clan.
Yeah, it was RZA.
Even though they were around, you know, really early.
They were around at the same time as, and I guess the Gravediggers actually toured with the Wu-Tang for a time. I've just been listening to this podcast with my friend Open Mike Eagle, where he's interviewing Prince Paul, who's one of my favorite producers of all time, and just a guy who has given me so much life through his music. And I've really been enjoying these deep dives into Prince Paul albums. So it was Prince Paul, a super producer, RZA, who at that time wasn't really that well known. He had been working in the industry trying to break through, and he had this group called the Wu-Tang Clan, and they actually made that record, and then the Wu-Tang Clan broke, and then this record that Prince Paul had been shopping around trying to get somebody to pick up, everybody was like, could we put that out now? Not because of you, because before Prince Paul was he explains it, I'm just like, wow, this is really crazy. But that record really changed my life, because it does have a good bit of humor, but it's also very dark. But it's also like, it's gritty street tales. Like, you know, it's about the harder sides of life, the harsher sides of growing up in, you know, these rough parts of New York.
You know, actually, let's listen to one of the songs, right?
Yeah.
Beware, four figures appear through the fog. Yeah, gravediggers cut like swords. Fear makes your brain go numb. You ain't got a clue where the gods come.
Yeah, so this is Constant Elevation by the Gravediggers.
I found the head. No luck or mere chance. I came to enhance, representing it. Open as a
bank. A deep thoracic, grave diggers and master, putting niggas in caskets, blowing like the wind when I'm in my spin.
I love this gritty production.
It's, you know, so good.
With the it sounds dirty.
Yeah. Definitely. And I think that was, I mean, that's kind of always been RZA's aesthetic, to like make things sound really crunchy. But I think it's interesting, because Prince Paul was always considered a little bit like taking chances and stuff. But when they connected on this record, I think they made something really special in the production that I don't think anybody else has really made anything like that since. I don't even know if they personally have made something like that since, because there is like, there's a little bit of whimsy to it, but it's also like dark and just like bang
of the story. Shit cooked up from Gravediggers laboratory, transferring brains with remains of a slug. Let the undertaker make a beast that's bug. Grab for creating, splitting jeans, chopping necks with the fat guillotines. I'm your nightmare, Frank with the verse, one verse.
But you still rap, right? You put out a rap album last year as Hemlock Ernst.
Yeah, that's like, so hip-hop really, it gave me life as a kid growing up in the middle of nowhere in the boonies of North Carolina. I really connected with these stories. And it's something I've really thought about, because it is, my dad would pick on me because he's like, you know, it's funny that you're listening to this music by these people telling their stories about, you know, growing up in places that are nothing like where you grew up. And I'm like, yeah, but that's why it's interesting. It's kind of like, you know, you love history and you study history to understand like what people are going through to create these struggles in the world. You know, hip hop was really born out of this form of people struggling and trying to have a voice and kind of giving themselves a voice to create something. And that really spoke to me as a kid who felt, you know, different than a lot of my friends, and felt that I wanted something that defined me. And when I discovered these stories like Gravediggers and Goody Mob Soul Food and De La Soul, I was like, wow, like I'm hearing somebody else's perspective on life, and I feel Like, in the core of it, I feel the same, but their story is so much different than mine. What does that mean? And it made me want to rap, first of all, to find that in myself. And in a way, it gave me my own armor and shield. You know, it gave me my own sword to feel like I had a voice. As a kid, not feeling that way. So really early on, it kind of saved me. It taught me about words, which I really fell in love with at like 14 years of age. And it gave me something to be proud of, and feel like this is what I am. So really, before I ever felt like I was an artist, or felt like I was a singer, I mean, it took me to about, I was 30 years old before I was like, I think I'm a singer now. After singing for 12 years in bands, I felt like an MC before everything, and that really gave me a voice early on, and helped me understand my own pain and struggle.
So, what did you rap about growing up?
I mean, when I was rapping growing up, I mean, it was definitely, I was experimenting more with what you could do with the voice. I mean, I was really into groups like Anti-Pop Consortium and the whole anti-con scene of the early 2000s, which was like, you know, Dose One and Y, the beatmaker Ad Nauseam, who's so amazing, the Deep Puddle Dynamics album, like these kinds of things where people were really, I mean, it's kind of funny because I do think some of that was me just exploring my vocabulary and like learning about rhyme.
It's really like a very technical sort of rap where you know, complex rhythms and complex lyrics and
yeah. So I think I was, first of all, I didn't have anything to say yet. Like, you know, I think there were probably moments where I was saying things, but I was very open to the idea of just like improvising and freestyle rap to then figure out what my feelings were. Like, I felt like when I could go into freestyle, then I was actually kind of mining my subconscious. Like when you become a real freestyle artist, I can't freestyle like I used to, nowhere close. But back then, whether or not I was, you know, I have tapes of like old stuff from high school. I don't know. I wasn't great as an MC, but I was saying things, and I was in a place where my filter was completely off. Like I think as you gain ground as a freestyle artist, you eventually like break down your things that stop you from saying things, and you start to just go into this deeper place and of flow and rhythm, but also just like words and story. That's really, it's kind of freeing. And as a child, like it's transcendent. You're like, what is happening? This is so cool.
Did you compete in any rap battles?
Yeah, I was in rap battles in high school as well as college. But the last time I was in a rap battle was, well, on stage, was I was probably about 22 or 23. So it's been a number of years. I've battled some people up until like 28 or 29, but I can't do it anymore.
Why?
I lost my chops. The thing is, you have to work at that stuff. You have to like work at keeping yourself open. I mean, it's like I said, you know, it is like once you get to that place, it's a crazy feeling. Like I can rap over literally anything, and say something. You're just like, I can be free. But I think once you start kind of guarding yourself and really thinking about songwriting for myself, when I really started thinking about songwriting, it kind of killed that freedom to say anything, because I realized that you do have a chance to write a song, and you should try to say it correctly, or not say anything correctly, but find a real truth in it. So it's like, how do I strip away all of this extra padding on the thing to make it sound cool and just like say the thing? I mean, I've been striving for that since 2010 and 11 to write that into my music. But the cool thing was, like, I went away from hip hop around 23 to really focus on Future Islands. And then I came back to it in 2013, after we'd been on the road for 5 years straight. And I wanted to write a song, and the guys didn't have any instrumentals for me to write to. So I pulled up some instrumental hip hop online and I wrote a song. And I was like, wow, this is the first time I've written a hip hop verse in like 5.5, 6 years. And it's probably the best thing I've ever written, because what happened was, is in that 5.5 years of being in Future Islands and just being on the road for 800 shows and writing 3 albums, I'd learned how to write songs. I had learned how to structure thought and feeling and make a turn at the end and these kinds of things. So when I went back and tried to write hip hop again, it wasn't just this jumbled, like, garble me up in the garble, rose petal statues of marble. Like, it wasn't this, like, tongue twister, like, wordplay, dense linear or alinear stuff. It was actual, like, wow, I just wrote about a feeling that I felt and the thing that I've been really fighting for, which is like what I do with Future Islands, but now I'm able to do it here. So it was kind of a reawakening. Yeah, I knew this girl named Alana with mad persona. She dealt with reality. So this song is The Hypnotic by The Roots, who were a really important group for me growing up. Alana was a Maryland, thorough and attractive. Shorty that's relaxed with me and kicking back with a fat flick to cool out. With stress, cause the game would make you wanna pull a tool out and go the old school route. But all of that ceased when that piece checking the jewel out. A brother was charged, light is split. This song is really like a simple, beautiful love song. It's Black Thought is talking about how he remembers growing up and his good friend Jermaine, when they were teenagers, had introduced him to a girl named Alana, and they kind of like had a little puppy love. Like they talked all the time on the phone, and then as they went off to like school and stuff, they lost touch. And he had, you know, and then he went off and he did his music and everything. But every once in a while, he'd think about her. And then, like, years later, he's somewhere out on tour. And then I'm like getting goosebumps as I'm telling this story. He's out on tour and he's like in his 30s or whatever. And he's like, she comes to his mind. He remembers his girl and he calls up his good friend Jermaine Trotter and is like, when was the last time you saw Alana? And the line is like, it was like my heart beyond somber, incredibly crushed kind of feeling, that of a boulder when he told me that her life was over. It made the room feel colder. She was a victim of the wicked system that controls her. It's all chaotic. Anyways, it's just like this. He brings you into this whole story about his life, his youth and this like beautiful love and then how they grew apart. And then at the end to just like, it all ends with him just finding out that she died and she's gone. And maybe that's why she came onto his mind. And it's just on this backdrop. But for me at a young age, hearing that song and then listening to it over and over again, like you get to the end and then you're like, I have to hear what happened. Like, so you go to the beginning and you listen through and you're crushed again at the end. And you're like, what did I miss? What are the details? Where did she go? And I think writing that kind of a song, hearing that kind of a song made me want to write that kind of a song. Like how do you... I don't know if I ever have quite written that kind of a song. I think that's a kind of song I strive for. Like, how do you really twist something so delicately at the end, where it's so delicate, but it crushes so much. I thought I could get with her when she was a little older, but she a victim of the wicked system that controlled her. It's all chaotic within my life, it's symbolic, forever shadow on my mental, I never forgot it. Yo, the psychotic, the hypnotic, you check it out, the most melodic, hypnotic, yeah, the hypnotic.
Future Islands grew out of this quite theatrical band called Art Lord and the Self-Portraits, mm-hmm. that you formed when you were in college in North Carolina back in 2003.
Yeah.
I read that you played this insane German character on stage, Lucky Ernst Frost, a self-obsessed German artist who made his self-portraits sing to him.
Yeah.
And the whole... that name was a reference to the poets John Locke and Robert Frost... and the artist Max Ernst.
Yes.
But what was the whole point of that project?
Well, the
it sounds quite insane.
Yeah, the idea behind Art Lord was it was supposed to be a performance art piece, and music was the medium. So the commentary that we were trying to bring light to was basically about how we treat our pop icons, celebrities, rock stars, and just like these figures in our society, how they can kind of be terrible people and we still love them and we still want to know everything about them. And the funny thing about it was this character formed, and it was kind of the story of Pygmalion and Narcissus. So this self-proclaimed lord of art, Lockernst Frost, is basically he rose to the height of fame in his late teens, and then hid away from the world because he couldn't stand the spotlight, and then he emerges 20 years later in this time. I was 18 at the time. I was like, 20 years later, he emerges in this tiny town of Greenville, North Carolina.
And you did it like a German accent on stage as
yeah,
well?
Yeah.
What did you sound like?
It was kind of this, for like, hello, how are you doing tonight? It's good to see you all. I know it's wonderful to see me. Aren't I beautiful? I'm quite wonderful, but you know, it's very hard to be so famous. It's hard to be so perfect. But what happened was, that people loved this character. You know, it's a little Sprockets.
I was going to say, it sounds like Sprockets.
Yeah, exactly.
Mike Myers' character on SNL.
Very much.
German art program.
But we weren't trying to make fun. It was supposed to be, it was in reverence to like to Kraftwerk and these artists we really loved. But yeah, the funny thing was this character was supposed to be really in love with himself and in a state of perpetual hurt because the spotlight is just too great and it's hard. His fame is difficult and he doesn't understand why people can't understand, but people loved the character and then he became very lovable. But yeah, we started the band. We did that for 2.5 years. But the thing was, we were very conceptual in the beginning, you know, songs like Art School Dropout and Little Line Drawing, Holy Light. What are some of the Too Many Artists? Like very, very strict to the concept of the art lord. But then we really started to write really songs that really meant something to us. We got good really fast. But then we were kind of stuck with this gimmick. I mean, a lot of people saw it as a gimmick and it worked, but at the same time, after a while you're like, you know, we want to be respected as musicians too, not just like a fun thing. Cause those shows were really, really fun back then. But yes. And then Future Islands kind of emerged out of that.
And now that you've experienced fame yourself, can you relate more to the themes that you explored in Art Lord?
I mean, honestly, a little bit. It's been interesting, you know, we kind of toiled in obscurity for many years as Future Islands, really going after this dream. Not obscurity, but it was a very slow process, an organic growth from 2006 when Future Islands began to 2014, where we would have like this big moment with David Letterman that would really change everything for us in a very short span.
It's funny because artists don't have their breakthrough anymore through one single TV show. That doesn't really happen anymore, but it did to you.
Yeah, and I mean, it's kind of funny because our label at that time, you know, we were excited to get on television because we did the record singles was the record that got us our chance to be on Letterman. But the record before that, On the Water, which was 3 years prior, we were supposed to be on the show and it never happened. And we were kind of like, I guess we missed our chance and it's not ever going to happen. So when we got the chance again, we were really excited for it. And our label, it was our first record with 4AD, amazing label. They were like, don't get too excited. Like, you know, TV doesn't break bands anymore. It doesn't really, it's cool though. Like for you and your family and your friends and your supporters, it's a great thing. And like, we're really proud of you, but don't expect that things are going to change overnight. And then, and then it changed. I think we actually made the music industry look at late night television different, at least for a time. They're like, oh, you can actually do something on like on TV again, because it just wasn't as big of a deal anymore. But we just did. I mean, the whole thing is we just did what we have always done. And for a lot of people,
it didn't feel like anything special when you were on the show. You know, you didn't feel like, you know, this went really, really well. God.
No, not at all. And I mean, I was definitely feeling like I was fighting with something inside myself, which is, do I go harder because we're on TV, or do I hold back a little bit?
So you held back?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. I mean,
you know, most people, and 3.3 million people have seen that YouTube clip. Most of them wouldn't, you know, assume that you held back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but I think that worked to our advantage. I mean, I think if I had gone full, you know, tip the scales the way I would on stage, then I think that it might have been a little bit more aggressive to some people that were able to turn towards it. I think there's something about controlling fire that makes it more powerful. Like stepping back just a little bit from the edge allows you to show even more emotion, because you show a greater.
There's some moments when you growl like a metal singer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, you know, it's not really.
Well, that was
the type of vocals you would connect to that kind of music.
That's another thing that I was actually not sure if I was going to do or not. And I didn't know until I just did it, where I was like, are you going to do the growl? Are you going to? And so I'm like just singing the song and I'm like, are you going to do it? Okay, we did it. I hope that sounds okay. But, you know, you gotta take your chances.
Even though Future Islands is a less theatrical band than Art Lord and the Self-Portraits, there's still a strong sense of theatrics in the way you carry yourself on stage. It's as if you try to bring forth a message, not only with the lyrics, but also with the way you move, the way you punch your heart or go into spasms.
Yeah, all of this stuff is really important to me in trying to tell a story. So, you know, we came up playing in houses and then like smoky bars. And the thing about, you know, being in a place that's just really loud, like being in a loud smoky bar, is, you know, like I spent a lot of time writing these words and nobody's even going to hear what I'm saying, you know, like we're, So I learned really early on, you know, I have to show people what I'm saying if I want them to like even catch a glimpse of what I'm trying to bring across. So showing that emotion in the face, showing that emotion in the body, the movement, and you know, being a guy who went off to school for sculpture, I was really interested in the idea of the body as sculpture, the form of the body as moving sculpture, and how we can look at that. So all of those things are important. And, you know, like hitting my chest, I've often said, you know, I don't hit my chest so that I feel it. I hit it so you feel it. You know, I hit my chest so when I do it, you go, ow, like, that's gotta hurt. And then you feel an empathetic, like this hurt for me. And that allows you to feel something. So a lot of that too is about creating and showing a vulnerability on stage. The stage creates power. The stage is a place of power. The microphone is power. But if I can have all of that power and use it to show vulnerability, then the vulnerability becomes strength. And that's the hope is that allows people in the audience to feel to feel like they can be themselves and that they can share their emotions, that they can be vulnerable in that space, in the show space, but also take that outside of the space is the bigger hope. But you know, these are ideals. These are things we strive for, and I think it works in some senses and maybe not at always.
When that video became viral, some people made fun of you. I read a YouTube comment. Someone wrote that you looked like an accountant on shrooms auditioning for the Olympic speed skating team.
I think there's worse ones than that.
But then I have a friend who's a music teacher who has shown some of his students that video, saying that this is the way to perform. This is how much emotion you can bring forth on stage.
Yeah. And I mean, for me, it's you can do what I did, and if the music doesn't or the song doesn't afford it, like if that's not what it's about, then it looks. It doesn't have any sincerity. Like the song performance needs to be about what the song's about. Because I believe that you can, if you wrote a song and you and you sing your song sitting down with a guitar or a piano, like if you can go into that performance sitting down and still, it'll still carry the same weight and same emotion because it's honest to you, because it's truth to you. So really what I try to do, a lot of people wonder how I carry that passion and emotion onto the stage. I always say, you know, it starts with the writing. Like you have to write a song that has passion. You have to write a song that has feeling, and to be able to be honest about it in front of people, you have to write it honestly.
And you achieved some kind of, what do you call it? The WTF effect, where people go, what the fuck?
No, WTF.
It almost reminded me of the way people reacted to David Byrne in Talking Heads when they started out. And he was so nervous, he couldn't move on stage.
He was really?
Super nervous. Mm-hmm. And he was standing there, not being able to move or anything. And that kind of became the trademark of the band.
Yeah.
You're quite the opposite because you're so passionate. But, you know, how something that people initially find, you know, just strange,
yeah,
turns into something else.
Well, also, like, even in that example of David Byrne, that's him, that's his reaction. You know, that's real too. It's kind of, that's kind of what I mean. Like this is how I believe it should be done, but I don't believe that every performer should do it the way I do it because their music needs to be about how they feel and what they have to offer as a musician. I really hope that there's not like a generation of musicians who just start, you know, beating their chests and doing speed skating ritual on stage, because I'll be out of a job.
So some of your fans even made a cute cartoon instruction guide to Future Islands aerobics.
Yes.
Some of the moves are the chest tear, the heart thump, the aeroplane, and the star.
they did pretty good.
Yeah.
But it's hard when when people figure out all your moves, it just means you have to invent some more.
But if you go dancing, like to a club or something, will you dance the same way as you dance on stage? Or?
Definitely not.
No.
No.
Okay.
I don't really dance. That's the whole funny thing. So this next song is probably one of my favorite records of all time. This is the opening track. It's from the Rachels, and the record is called Music for Egon Schiele. It was written as the score for a documentary, and it was the first thing the Rachels did, and they're just kind of like a modern classical group that the music is just so beautiful. It means so much to me.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I read in Rolling Stone magazine that you once managed to split your pants on stage. Does that happen a lot?
That does happen a lot. It had to have happened at least like 50 times in my life. But, you know, Future Islands has played over 1,200 shows. Art Lord played over 100 shows. The Snails have played 50 or 60 shows. I've been on stage a lot. So one every 20, 30 shows, that's normal.
So it's important to wear nice underwear in case everyone sees it.
Yeah, unless you're trying to make a statement.
But have you hurt yourself on stage as well?
Yeah, well, I have a torn ACL right now, which I suffered in 2015. We were opening at Red Rocks, which is this amazing amphitheater in Colorado. We were opening for Morrissey, and I was trying a little too hard to impress Morrissey.
Was he watching?
Probably not. That's the whole thing. I was like, he might be watching. I want to be sure that it's really good. And I tore my knee up and didn't go to the doctor for about a year because we were still on tour and found out that I had torn my ACL. But I had torn it before performing in Paris in 2009, had it repaired. And the thing is, you can't have it, or I had it reconstructed and I can't have it repaired again. So I'm without a right knee, basically.
Speaking of Red Rocks, that's where U2 recorded their live album, Under a Blood Red Sky. And I think Bono from U2 sent you a crate of Guinness and champagne after seeing your Letterman performance.
Yeah, we were playing a two-night stay in Dublin, and we got like this crate sent over and of Guinness and champagne, and it had a little note from U2 that said, you know, mix one part to two parts, or maybe it was just one part to one part to make this drink. I think it was called a black velvet, but I'm not sure. But
did you try it?
Of course we did. It was good.
Guinness and champagne.
You can't really go wrong with either of those, so just put them together.
I read this interview with your friend Dan Deacon, who's an electronic artist from Baltimore, and he said that he sometimes worries about you. And I quote, "Sam's obviously a great lyricist and is very vulnerable, but I do worry about him. I think he drifts into the darker part of his past, which is okay as long as he doesn't put himself in emotional danger to do so." Which dark parts of your past do you think he's referring to?
Well, I mean, honestly, Dan was a big, you know, we've been working on this record we're about to put out. Depending on when this podcast comes out, maybe it's already out. But we've been working on As Long As You Are. And even before the last record came out, The Far Field, I was in this stupid relationship that I shouldn't have been in. And I think in a way I used this relationship knowing that I shouldn't be in it because subconsciously I knew that it was going to end and then I could like write a song or two. And I talked to Dan about this and he was just like, "What's wrong with you, dude? Like, why? Like, you're not being honest with yourself. You're not being honest with your feelings. And really you're hurting yourself for no reason. You're hurting yourself for art. He was basically like, "It hurts me to see you in pain all the time. It hurts me to see you deal with these things, and not be happy." You know, and he really made me think about this conversation was in 2016. He really made me think about what I was doing and what I was striving for. And I was doing that already in my life because of the success of singles and all the touring we did, and the spotlight getting bigger. We talked about this where we were talking about this briefly with Art Lord, like as the spotlight got bigger on Future Islands, I became, my social anxiety became greater. It made me retract more from the world because I just, I didn't know how to deal with all the attention because like I said, like the stage is where I feel comfortable. Out on the street, I don't feel the same. Like I feel vulnerable in a negative way. I feel self-conscious in a negative way. I feel different and isolated. So I think Dan really just as a friend was like, he was tired of seeing me hurt. And I really had to question what I was trying to do with my art at that point in our career. Why, and feeling really like that the last record we put out was shallow in a lot of ways. In ways that And not all the songs. There's some really great songs there and a lot of songs that have meaning, but there are songs in there that I'm not behind. And I don't feel that with any of our other records. Like, I think I got away from my truth, and wrote for the machine. I wrote for the machine of the album and the business of putting out records instead of writing something that I really meant. And so really going into this record and feeling like the most whole that I felt in a long time, if ever, and feeling at peace with a lot of things in my past, and coming to peace through being in a healthy space and a healthy relationship, it allows me to kind of see the world in a very different way, see my past in a very different way that's allowed me to kind of deal with those things in a healthy way. But I mean, I dig into those places because that's where you find who you are. That's where you find who you've been. And I think, you know, to find truth in ourselves, we have to, it can take like years, you know, years of ups and downs. And some of us never find our truths, and we go on with our lives always wondering what if this, what if that, instead of coming to terms with the things that we should either celebrate or accept or embrace in our lives. As you know, sometimes the worst things that happen in our lives are also the best times, and sometimes the things that we think are the best times in our lives that we hold on to were actually the worst times, you know. And it's really, it takes time to understand the truth of those events.
You glorify the past when the future dries up, like Bono once sang, I think.
Oh, for real?
Anyway, he's one of your most famous fans, but Gwyneth Paltrow also asked you for a selfie.
Yeah, yeah, that was cool. Well, I think I asked her for a selfie, but she started talking to me, or we walked past each other backstage at a concert. We were opening for the Strokes. This is maybe 5-6 years ago in London. We had to leave. We were really bummed because we had to leave early, to make it to Germany the next day for a show. So we played, hung out for a little bit and then hit the road. Didn't even get to see the Strokes play. Really not happy about it. And as I'm leaving, this woman says like, "Hey, good show, like really big fan." And I was like, "Oh, thank you." And like looked up, "Hi, thank you." And then walked past. And then I was like, "Oh my God, that was Gwyneth Paltrow." So I had to run back and be like, "Hey, I'm really sorry. I just wanted to say, hey." So we talked for a minute. And then I was like, "I never do this. Could I get a selfie?" So I've only taken selfies with Gwyneth Paltrow and Kool Keith.
Oh, Kool Keith.
Yeah. So those are the two.
Let's listen to Dr. Octagon.
We should listen to Dr. Octagon.
I myself, Mr. Gerbic, half shark, half man, skin like alligator, carrying a dead walrus. Check it. With my white eyes, gray hair, face is sky blue, yellow sirens react. My skin is colored lilac. My skin turned orange and green.
Okay, up next we have Kool Keith as Dr. Octagon with Dan the Automator. This is Half Shark, Half Alligator, Half Man. I think the title speaks for itself.
Alligators behind me, feel my skin is hard, transvestites, and people watch space parasites. I lift his head in the store, legs in the street, body on Wilcox with blood dripping off my feet. LAPD through gray clouds, couldn't see me. I first turned rainbow, close my eyes, watch my brain glow. People got scared and ran away, they think I'm weird. I was born this way, half shark, alligator.
Half shark, half alligator, half man. Lovely title. It's like that South Park episode about man, bear, pig.
Oh, yeah.
It's half man, half bear, half pig.
I mean, I understand that song because, like, haven't you sometimes felt like you're half shark, half alligator, and half man?
When haven't I?
Exactly.
Meet elephants, I'll battle streets with a zebra. My mechanism is more than Dion's psychic voodoo.
What made you move from North Carolina to Baltimore?
I mean, really, it was Dan Deacon. He was a really good friend of the band. And Dan is just like a hilarious, sweet guy. And so then he moved to Baltimore around 2006 or seven. And that was right as Future Islands was beginning. And he started a new scene that was called Wham City. And he was really urging us, like, come, please, come and live at this warehouse and be a part of the scene. And we were like, you know, Williams in college, and I had just moved across the state to Asheville, North Carolina, away from the guys. It was basically like, we can't do that. And then after I lived away from the guys for about a year and a half, I mean, honestly, like in 2007, I thought that Future Islands was going to just break up and be done. Part of the reason the band's named Future Islands is because even when we started the band, like I believe personally that one day we might just break apart. So I saw it like in the future, the three of us might not be together anymore and we might just be islands off on our own. So that was how prescient that name was. Like when we came up with it, I'm like, who knows how long this is going to last? Because I was dealing with drug problems at that time in my life. And you know, 5 months after Future Islands formed, I left town to get clean and to clean up my life and never went back to Greenville, never went back to live there. So one day I called William in 2007 and I said, hey man, I'm tired of working at Domino's Pizza in Asheville and I want to make music. So I think I'm going to move to Baltimore and start a band or something. Like Dan's doing it. All of our friends are doing it. And then William was like, hey, that's what I want to do. We're like, I want to do it. And I was like, cool, we can start a band. And so then, so William got up there first at the end of 2007. I got up there January 2008. And then at that time, Garrett had just split up with his longtime relationship. And we convinced him to move to Baltimore. And as soon as Garrett got there in June, and then as soon as Garrett got there, we pretty much just went on tour for 5 years. And that's where we cut our teeth as Future Islands.
When I think of Baltimore, I think of John Waters, the filmmaker.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he has been to a few of your shows.
Yeah. John's a fan and a friend. We've also been to quite a few of his Christmas parties and
really?
Stuff.
Really? What's that like? A Christmas party at John Waters?
It's awesome. I mean, I think it's probably not as crazy as it used to be, just because everyone's settling down. John's settling down, but he's a really lovely guy, just really charming and funny. But his house is really cool, and there's like wild art hidden away in all these different areas, and you know, just the pictures of him, the pictures in his house of his life with just like, you know, everybody. It's wild, but he's, you know, I think that's kind of a rite of passage in Baltimore. Like if you get to that point, where you're doing something really cool, then you get like a call from John, or he, you know, comes out to a show and then he invites you to his Christmas parties. And then you just kind of become a part of this, like that Baltimore arts community. It felt like a rite of passage the first time we met him. And he was like, you guys are really cool. We're like, whoa, John Waters thinks we're cool. That's the best thing.
John Waters' most famous movie is probably Hairspray, where he worked with Debbie Harry, whom you did a beautiful duet with. Mm-hmm. How did that come about?
Well, actually, the Debbie Harry collaboration came through John Congleton, who produced The Farfield. So John had just been working on a new Blondie record that same year, which would come out, I guess, the same year as our album, 2017. And so we were trying to find an artist, a singer to duet with, and we kind of been shooting around a few ideas. And for me, like we were talking about a lot of different people. But for me, I was like, I really feel like we need like an icon, like an iconic voice. No disrespect to Debbie, but I really wanted to get Kate Bush. I was like, how do we get Kate Bush on this song? But so then John was like, oh, well, what about Debbie Harry? Like, I could just give her a call and see if she was into it. And we're like, what? And he's like, you know, that's just like not something that we would have even thought possible. So when John was like, oh, why don't I give Debbie Harry a buzz and see what's up? So he sent her an email and sent her the track. And she immediately was like, I really love this. Yeah, I'd be interested in doing it. So, I mean, we didn't actually meet her until after the record was already out. And we would meet at Jules Holland in London, doing television in London. And then we would meet again at some festivals where Blondie and us crossed over and shared, you know, backstage festival area type things and say hello. But she was really sweet and great through the process. It was really cool getting her on.
Speaking of duets, you did another beautiful duet with Nina Keener, the Swedish singer.
Yeah.
It's called Chapped Lips, and it sounds like this.
It's like you came in from a dream I had last night. I saw
So where did you record that? Was it online or did you meet her?
No, I was in... So that was a funny thing. So the producer of that record with Nina was Daniel Fagerstrom, who has also, you know, done the most recent Viagra Boys stuff. He was in Skulled Effects. Awesome dude. Do you know Daniel?
I met him once, I think, because I'm a huge Viagra Boys
fan. Yeah, they're awesome.
Myself.
Yeah, Viagra Boys are awesome. So that was my... So Daniel reached out to me because of his group Skulled Effects. They had a weird connection with Baltimore. Like, they did a record with this guy Daniel Higgs, who was in this band Lungfish, as well as touring with Zomes, who's this solo project of this guy Asa Osborne, who was in the guitarist in Lungfish. And so Daniel just wrote me out of the blue on my email one day and said, "Hey, I'm a good friend of Asa's. I'm in Skulled Effects, and I've got this track that I thought maybe you'd want to sing on." And, you know, reading that, I was like, "Oh, Asa, what did you get me into?" And then I clicked on the track and I was like, "Wow, this song is beautiful." So it was just Nina singing the parts and the instrumental, not quite as lush as it ended up, but pretty full. And I was just like, "This song is gorgeous." Like, I wrote him back like, "Hey Daniel, this song is beautiful, but why would you ever want me to sing on this and ruin it?" I was like, "Nina's voice is so gorgeous." And he's like, "No, but I think it would be really cool." It was one of those where Daniel said, "You know, you can record the lyrics and send them to me." And then I was like, "Well, actually, I'm dating someone in Sweden, and I'll probably be in Stockholm in like a month if you want to do it." So I ended. He was like, "Oh, that's crazy! I didn't know that." Well, okay. So then the next time I was in Stockholm, this was probably November of 2017. We got together and recorded the song at a little studio. I forget the name of that part of sound. It's south of Soder. But anyways, we got together and recorded the song. I met Nina and met Daniel for the first time, and they've become friends, since then. And it's really cool, 'cause I'm really behind the things that Daniel's doing. But it's funny, 'cause like Julia got really into the Viagra Boys a year and a half ago.
Julia, your girlfriend?
Yeah. So I looked up who the hell produced this Viagra Boys, and I was like, "Oh, it's Daniel Fagerstrom and Pelle Gunnerfelt." I was like, "Daniel's on this too, you know, my friend." I didn't even know he did this. So it's kind of cool, because me and Daniel have actually started to talk about working on a future project. Because for me, you know, I'm going to be living in Sweden, and I want to you know, start my own musical family here.
So you plan on settling here?
Yeah, as long as the government will allow it. I'm going through the correct steps.
I'm sure they will.
Yeah, I hope so. I want to be here. That's the plan for my
Otherwise,
future.
I'll help to hide you as an illegal immigrant.
Oh no, don't say that. You're gonna get me in trouble.
Have you been approached by any metal bands because of your terrific growling?
I have, but I can't do it. My voice is so fragile. I think that if I actually went and tried to do an actual metal album, I wouldn't ever be able to speak again. It would just like, because I don't like those people really. They have worked to figure out how to do that and bounce back from it. You know, it's even like my voice. I do things that you probably shouldn't do, but I can do them because I've been doing them for years. You know what I mean? I know the certain things to do to bounce back, or the way you just like, you know, I think with metal singing, you're supposed to actually just like relax your vocal cords completely. So you're not tightening them at all, but just letting them just like just go. Because it's when you tighten your cords, like when you're trying to go high or something, or even like coughing, that you actually strain. Even, you know, whispering is like the worst thing you can do for your voice, which is, it's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'm not starting a whisper core band either.
But I guess some metal people would also be impressed by, you know, the way you, on stage, sometimes you, the way you, I mean, your swag can remind me of Glenn Danzig.
Yeah, Danzig is a huge influence on me as a kid. Like,
really?
Yeah, Danzig. So, like, the first bands that I really loved were Primus, Danzig, and Elton John. That's like me at 10 years old. That's what I was listening to, which is pretty weird, cool 10-year-old.
Yeah, you wanted to play an Elton John track. Which one was that?
So this next song is Goodbye by Elton John.
And now that it's all over, the birds can nest again. I'll only snow when the sun comes out. I'll shine only when it starts to rain.
Just imagine a sad 10-year-old eating cheese and crackers listening to this, and that's me.
What made you sad as a 10-year-old?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think it's just like, it's kind of like I was saying earlier, you know, like sad music, even as a kid, made me, it made me feel good in a way. Like, it made me feel okay to feel those emotions. And I think a lot as a child, I just like felt the isolation of being a child. Sometimes being a child is not being heard. Sometimes being a child is not being seen, or, you know, the adults are talking type thing. You know what I mean? So I think there is isolation that also happens on the schoolyard and things like that. So I think it was just me being a hypersensitive child to those emotions at a very young age. But I think in a way that actually really aided me in my life and in my career, and in understanding like the importance of emotion as a strength instead of a weakness.
And also as a rapper, I guess you brought some sadness to that as well.
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, at the same time with, you know, with rap music, I think especially at that age, I was trying to find a way to cover up my weakness, you know, like hip hop, the braggadocious side of hip hop allowed me to be really strong and macho, and kind of fight against that weak feeling. Again, like I said before, it gave me my sword and my shield. But then I also felt like I could say something that made me very vulnerable in a strong way, in that sense, you know, like hip hop taught me that, like, you know, I always think of KRS-One, while you were at home with your mother afraid of the dark, I was sleeping out in Prospect Park, eating one meal every 48 hours. You know, it's like hearing that as a kid and being, feeling like I grew up in the Jiggy era of hip hop, where it was, you know, it was like Mace on TV all the time and P. Diddy and Will Smith. And I was like, I didn't get anything from them. I got no emotion. And then I heard KRS-One and I was like, there's nothing glamorous about that. Like I was sleeping in the park, barely eating, you know, like that's my story. And I didn't feel, that didn't make him sound weak. That made him seem strong. And that meant a lot to me as a kid.
I remember seeing KRS-One live here in Stockholm once.
Oh, wow.
And everyone was talking about how he took the boat. He didn't come over the Atlantic on a plane. He went by boat.
Really?
Yeah. Or that's what people said. Uh-huh. And then when he arrived here, he was complaining that it was too cold at the venue where he was going to perform. So he made them put up, you know, heaters on stage, a lot of heaters. And then he goes on stage. He's wearing like two sweatshirts and a big jacket. And he has like a, you know, hat on and everything. And he raps for 15 minutes, then he gets overheated and nearly collapses on stage.
No way.
No, it was just one of the stupidest things I've ever seen. I guess they felt that Sweden must be really, really, really cold.
It's so, like devastatingly cold. Yeah. Like I better cover up. Hey, Frederick, can we wrap this up? I really need to go.
You need to go? Okay. Well, I hope to see you again, which I will since you're moving to Sweden.
Yeah, most definitely. I hope so. Let's have a beer.
Let's have a lot of beers.
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be here.
Den här podcasten producerades av Daniel Bäckström för Lejon Media. Sam Herring from Future Islands var hemma hos Draget.
On a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered. Great thing, my name.